Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Game Dev Unchained, the number one game development podcast about game development and the lifestyle thereof. This is your host, Brandon Pham. And with me, a special guest, Raid Prokopovich. How are you doing, Raid?
I'm good. Raid Prokopovich. Sure.
There we go. So, Raid, before we start today's episode, this is the part of the podcast where I ask our guest, which is yourself, to talk about a little about yourself, where you're from, where you're heading, just to give a proper introduction here.
Sure. We're from Sweden. Sozup is a Swedish company. I'm born Swedish. I am Swede. My parents and grandparents came here from Serbia. Therefore, we also have an office or a connection to Serbia where we do have our second office. Prior to Sozup, I was early in e-commerce. By soul, an entrepreneur. So had one job and then quit that and started my online furniture sale company called Furniture Box back in 2004-05. That company today is one of the largest Scandinavian online retailers of furniture. So that's where I started. From there, we went deeper into production of furniture. And somewhere along the wrong line, I decided to follow up on a childhood dream, or, you know, make video games. We play video games. You sure want to make them. And that set me off starting Sozup in 2015.
It's quite a journey, man.
So, yeah. Sorry, my English. I need a couple of minutes so that the English kicks in properly. That was my professional side. Personal side, I'm a father of two beautiful girls, married happily still. And we reside just outside of Stockholm in a city called Nyköping. This is where we have our office. I must say I'm grateful for the journey I made, and I'm grateful that we are where we are today with Sozup. So I'm super excited. I'm super excited about everything that's heading my way.
Yeah,
and I'm super glad to be here at your podcast.
Of course, man. I'm glad you're here with us. There's a couple things there that was quite trajectories and turns, especially coming from online furniture to your childhood dream of making games, like. I gotta suppose that there were at least some studies before jumping in. Like, what were your main strengths about the game development that made you to really fall into it and build a company from scratch?
Well, actually, I had zero to none experience when I headed into e-commerce. First of all, I quit that job. I found OS Commerce, it was called, open source online e-commerce tool. Started with like zero research, zero pre-knowledge or experience. And the same thing with Sozup. I mean, I think it was 2013, I was looking over, I think it was the American company named Glue. I was looking over their portfolio. I do have an understanding about things, even if I'm not a programmer or had no experience. I saw that, okay, this level, the games are at this level now, devices are getting stronger. Most likely, mobile games are going to follow console games, I mean, sooner or later. And that was the research I did. Basically stating that phone performance would go up, and that eventually what you see on PC, you will see on mobile. And that's where everything started.
The studying of trends, I think it has been one of the most under appreciation, undervalued, at least in the AAA sector. Like you said, the mobile industry, and we have many guests from the mobile industry before on the show.
Yeah.
The main, one key thing that differentiates its this sub-genre of video games, which I feel is like probably one of the strongest arms of the game industry, has been the mobile, and they're very statistically driven, and you know, risk and reward is often calculated before any steps are taken.
Yeah.
So your approach there, it sounds very natural that the mobile is at least more attractive than the AAA industry, right? So,
well,
was mobile part of that decision? That, like, it just seems more responsible at that stage.
Well, this was back in 2013. We don't do games like we did back then, just leaping into it. But back then, it was how I saw it. It was simple. For me, it was like, if you look at console games, let's say PC, you had strong titles. You had huge studios making, you know, fantastic games even back then. But when you looked at mobile, you couldn't see that. What you saw when you were looking, when I was looking at on the mobile sector, you saw much smaller games, simplified games, smaller scope, smaller cognitive load. And I didn't see an opportunity for me, you know, without any experience heading head to head, let's say, with DICE or any of those shooter studios back then. But on mobile, for me, it was open. I mean, when we started developing Armed Heist, you had no shooters.
Right. Yeah. Back then,
you had no shooters. So those kind of shooters, these full blown shooters, they didn't exist on mobile. And back then, well, we didn't need to do any study or statistics or any risk reward. It was just a classical leap, you know. It's so simple. That's what I saw. It's so simple, but it was everything but simple once I had it into it.
Right. Like, the limitations of mobile was kind of like it's the classic console limitations of any generation, right? The exciting thing about mobile has always been its approachability. It's vast. entry for a lot of people, because everyone has a phone. And
yeah,
I think you're right. Like, around 2013, people always kind of thought, yes, eventually these phones are going to get stronger every year. Eventually, you know, it'll be the ultimate device, because it'll match, pretty good, against the console and PC counterparts. To a point where it's like, it's great, right? Where it's, you know, you can transport around. A lot of the things the last few years, I would love to kind of hear your thoughts, because I would also assume that you were still statistically driven in what's the trends are going forward, right? So the last few years,
yeah,
the streamability, although, you know, Stadia kind of crashed and burned a bit, there's still a lot of hopes in that genre of seeing, you know, playing any system. I would love to kind of hear your thoughts. I know it's a little apart from SOZAP, but
like, no, it's a good question. I mean, 2013, you didn't have these games. You have them today, right? So we have an audience. I believe that the big corps, so let's say the big guys. I mean, once you have the audience, the user, they perform. I mean, the technology performs, if you understand what I mean. I mean, we're talking about Stevie or streaming. Your question was about streaming experiences to any device, right?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, once you have the users, so now it's proven you have these gamers, I mean, mid-core, hardcore gamers, they are playing Armed Heist, PUBG, Fortnite, Call of Duty, and so on. So the audience is there. Once the audience is there, you know, the services they are coming. So I do see in the near future people playing via streaming, basically, where the device performance is regardless. As long as you have the right connectivity, you will be able to play these games. And that's something we are looking at, and our upcoming shooters or the game ideas we're working on now, they are all cross-platform. Today we do not make a difference between mobile, PC, or the consoles. We see that as one experience. We now only look at the users.
And so the
devices.
Right. The controls and devices is what differentiates most consoles or where you want to play it, right? From PC to console to mobile. So especially a shooter, it's one of the biggest challenges to kind of like either touch sensitive or basically not rely on accessories. Switch kind of came at a funny time, right? It introduced like the side control, which was revolutionary. And then you start seeing mobile games or mobile devices kind of having its own accessories. Like, yeah, maybe this is a way to kind of use your mobile device. So what kind of thoughts and research towards that you guys saw, if there's anything?
We do see that issue. I mean, if you're playing a player versus player PvP experience, if somebody just has a phone and the other counterpart, let's say, has a keyboard and and that setup, that's going to be difficult, right? So how we see it is, first of all, we try to discuss, as Arm Heist is a co-op multiplayer game, so we're playing together against the game. We try to spin around that, because then you don't have that issue. But then, of course, every shooter, even Arm Heist, is going to get player versus player. So you have that issue. Even if a mobile player has just a mobile and the other player has the control on the mobile, it will be an uneven experience. So, yeah. But I think that, I mean, if you have the users, if you have a good system of, if you have enough users and you have a good system of segmenting them via ELO rating or in some player rating, you will avoid some of the issues. But yeah, it's a question. It's a question. And it doesn't have a solution, clear solution today, if we're talking about player versus player.
Generally, there's so many challenges, right, with players and the changing landscape. I think the last couple of years, especially with the pandemic, right, pushing certain, for the game industry overall, we saw a hike in pretty much all the sectors. I guess the only thing that I didn't hear too much is like with AAA, there was, I think over across the board, there was a lot of adjustments, right, to kind of work remotely. Even though everyone's celebrating, yeah, this we usually do work faster, but the reality was, at least with working with friends and people, there was a general challenge of just being connected. And these are just regular people that are not used to being outside the office. And it's like a certain attitude, at least in the AAA sector. I guess my question is the mobile side, like, you know, through your network, through SOZAP, What did you guys have challenges working remotely? Did you guys have any of that you didn't see, or was it just easier for mobile folks to kind of
there's no difference. I mean, if we're talking about maintaining a project, let's say Armed Heist, maintaining and further developing it, I think remote work is easier because you know the game. Everybody is warmed up, right? And the tasks are created and the functionality is decided and so on. And then the old team, I've seen zero to none drop in performance, let's say, in development time or development quality and so on. However, I do see an issue if you ask me to develop a new game, like to starting up a new game and doing that remotely, like the team is working from home. I mean, I don't like that setup, and I would not premiere that setup because I believe that games, even if they're structured and documentation, what has to be done and so on, especially during the first production phase, I think a lot of the stuff that makes the game great comes in between the lines, how I would say, in between the code, right? It comes from ideas, interactions over the lunch, over the coffee break, or just in another dialogue. That's where you discuss the game, the ideas of the documentation, of what's already been scoped out. So if you remove that, we at least don't have that experience when we work remotely. If you remove that, I believe you will get the game will not be as great as it could be.
Right, definitely.
So I again, we worked remotely, and we shuffled people. So we had half the guys staying at home every other day, you know, so we wouldn't be that many people in the office. But now we signed a new office, which is bigger, a bigger space. And as it looks, the pandemic is getting
it's quieting passing. Down a little. Yeah.
Yeah, it's quieting down. But I do believe creating games, creating a product, any product actually, it's about the people. It's about the people that work together, that laugh together, that even cry together. But you know, have these really tight relationships, and I see that difficult via Zoom or any other video conference call. I don't get the same emotion. It's like we are having this call now, right? For me, it's really difficult to, you know, just to relax, because for one, I can't see you. For two, if I see you, you're remote, right? If we would sit next to each other, we would be able to see each other's body language, see the other person's reaction, you know, where you would be promoting me to talk about more about this and that. That will be in the air, if you understand how I see it. It's a creative process.
I totally get you, man. Like, the engagement is at this point irreplaceable. I know, like, there's a lot of hype with AR and potentially, like, people seeing digital versions, like if you put on goggles and stuff, but that's a few years away until we get to that point. But I get you when it comes to collaboration creatively. Especially in the brainstorming session of a game cycle, it's very important to kind of have that ability to kind of sit across from someone and just bounce ideas off each other. There is kind of like a coldness when it becomes virtual only, where it really is becoming the focus of it's just about work, right? And it's different.
It is different. I mean, as a CEO of a company like SozUp now, we're 30 men and women strong now. We have half the people in Serbia, in the Serbian office, right? And I speak to them more or less daily, right? But it's when I actually go down, and I'm increasing that because of the COVID situation, I've not been able to do that for this past time. But now I'm slowly increasing my physical visits to Serbia, because I don't know. I mean, when you talk about something, when somebody has an idea, if it does something good or does something, let's say, not so good, if you are there, I mean, the physical presence or the physical contact, even if like, hey, great job, and I, you know, tap you on the shoulder naturally, or, you know, just human interaction, it I believe it feeds us with energy. It feeds us with energy to perform better or to go over those hurdles together. Like if there's 20 people in the office and we have an issue, it's 20 people in the office, you know, assisting each other getting over that hurdle, whatever it may be, right? But if everybody's working remotely, for me, it's a sad vision, you know, people remotely in front of their screens trying to produce a product, create a product. I don't see that. I would be terrified if that would be our future.
Yeah, I think I'm still on the fence with things, because I can see both ways, right? A lot of companies right now, you know, we see it with Apple, we see it with Google, we see a lot of these companies kind of backstepping, like remote forever, right? And at the same time, they're like, we'll see you back in the office September, and special case only if you want to. And there's like a huge resistance with a lot of employees saying that they'd rather quit than and do something else. So we're seeing like this kind of like struggle of what's correct and what's not. And I think the truth is always in between. Last year we dedicated a few episodes towards like, is remote working all it is, what it was supposed to be, right? But the finding was pretty clear. Like a lot of companies were struggling with it. It wasn't all roses, right? There was a lot of challenges. The connection, like you mentioned, it was a key factor of it not working. And I think overall, I think overall people, game developers like to think of themselves as completely self-sufficient and always get the work done. But I think the large percentage of us are pretty lazy. And that accountability, I only think certain individuals can really do that. And it's from practice of freelancing or doing side work or side hustling or started their own business before so they can self-manage. I don't think a lot of people have that skill set to completely do it full time at home just yet. It takes time, right? And the pandemic did not help. Yeah.
No, I mean, if you look at the game, if somebody can do it, game developers can. My colleagues, all the people at SOZAP, I mean, they're here because they love what they do, right? So I would say that for many of them, it works. In shifts, it might even be good. You know, let's say working at home 1 week of four or 1 week of six, or when you have your tasks when we know what we have to do, let's say a coming period, then I see it as refreshing. But I do believe that, I mean, I don't, companies like Google or Apple, they're so big that I can't even imagine how they keep their culture or you know, how they keep these things alive. Most likely they have a whole department just dedicated for this. But at SOZAP, and for me especially, I, as a CEO, wouldn't want to run a company, even if it's, I don't know, profitable. I don't want to run it without the human interaction. But that's basically my stance. I mean, I don't want to run a company, even if everybody performs, even if, you know, everybody does their tasks and we, you know, the results and everything is there. Personally, I wouldn't enjoy being CEO of such a company.
Human
interaction,
right?
Especially today and in the future, I think it's something to strive for. But again, we'll see. Yeah. I mean, Sweden, we'll see. For Sweden, I know a lot of companies have struggled with keeping the performance up when people are away, as you said. Not all of us, and many of us are not able to self-manage. But I don't see this lasting more than the pandemic, if you ask me. As soon as the pandemic is under control fully, I think 90% of the companies or more will go back to how it was prior.
I agree. I think I'm already seeing that with a lot of the tech companies. They're reversing their stance. I like to think it's, the truth is always in the middle, right? We obviously have one where the employees like to stay at home, and then the other side, you got like yourself, right? Who see the benefit of being in the office. And I've seen both arguments being pretty much correct, because I mean, some companies can say, yeah, we were super efficient, this and that. But even then, collaboration is so key in a lot of these creative ventures that I don't see a replacement for that just yet. And like you said, it would probably be a hybrid approach. With SOZAP, going back to that, right? You've kind of like started this company from just surveying where the industry was heading. And I mean, it came all true in huge folds with shooters, especially the last few years being huge on mobile, and continuing to be that way. And especially with younger generation, it seems like the phone is probably their first console, and most likely they're going to stick to that as their only console. Even then, I don't think it's the demise of consoles per se. You know, the PS5, the Xbox, all sold out still, even when economically the world was supposed to see in a disaster, but it still sold out. People were still being able to afford those machines. So if anything, it looks like the industry had this tremendous growth over the pandemic. People who got introduced to games early on are discovering, you know, more hardcore games or games that are more time intensive, I would say. So the growth of it and everything is, I would like to ask, is it the expectation that you saw before? Like, where is it heading from here on out for the next 5 years, you feel, with the onslaught of VR becoming more popular? You know, Apple's, it's rumor AR features are coming out too. Like, a lot of these things are happening.
To add some more history, I mean, when I got the idea to start SozApp and when we got the first team, I mean, it was only 9, 10. I mean, if you count the outsourcing that was done with our guys, it was 10 men on that game. So we had this great, we saw the future. We were right about the future. We had this great game idea. We had everything except the resources. I mean, 10 guys made that game. So what I've learned from that is, first of all, you need to have the studio, right? And SozApp as a studio is now starting to get one man on each part of the deck, if we say so. So that's the first thing. And most of us know each other, and we've done Armed Heist. So we're warmed up. When I look at the future, I do see two things. I do believe I see two things. One being that software is getting more and more, the toolbox is more and more complete. I mean, you saw that Unreal MetaHuman.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I do see that what needed 200 people, a project that needed 200 people 2 years ago, 3 years ago, right? I do believe it's going to need less and less people as we go forward. I mean, I believe Unreal and Unity, they're buying up different services. And I do believe that, you know, in 5 years from now, most likely it will be easier for smaller studios to engage in these larger titles. Let's say Battle Royale, 100 people networking, you know, creating characters, creating those terrains and assets, all of that. So I do see a future where smaller studios, if they are creative enough, can compete for the top. For the top experience for the users. At the same time, I do believe that the future will be people will not have a PlayStation or an Xbox or a PC. People will have their input device, like a control. For example, the PS5 controls now are awesome with all this haptical feedback and stuff. So I do see that in the future, you're going to buy your input device, your handheld control, and that's going to be what you have. And then when you play, you play on any screen via your control, the control you like, the control you chose. That's what I see. So I see a cross platform, cross device future. That is what I see, along with, as I said, Unreal and Unity, all the other engines getting more and more pre-stuffed with functionality and tools, which makes for an exciting future. I mean, what if What if a 50-man studio could make GTA 5 experiences, let's say, in 5 to 10 years from now?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely correct, man. Like, the tools are enabling smaller teams to repeat what larger teams used to do like 5 years ago. Right. So that is certainly the trend, where the tools are just getting rid of the boring labor that most game developers never wanted to do beforehand, right? So it gives it opens the up. It's either outsourced or it's being fixed with these tools, and just allowing us to be creatives again. And like you said, the Fortnite was a big thing for industry in many ways, but the most important thing it did was it forced crossplay, and I think between that and Warzone, like the shooters, of course, leading the way again on a lot of these innovations, that was huge. You know, for the longest time, when we were growing up, Xbox playing against PlayStation players was never a thing. They're competing products, and they're allowing their player base to play with each other on a single game, and now it's becoming so standard. Now it becomes weird. It's like, why can't I play with everyone that plays this game? So that was a huge step towards a future that you're kind of talking about, where input devices are kind of like your choice, but the content is just free for everyone. Not free, but like just for anyone to play who wants
to play. It's accessible. It's accessible. I mean, I don't know. Again, I'm not a developer, and I'm for sure not as technically, I don't have that understanding that my colleague and CTO and founding partner, Christopher Blumen, has. But I like that I don't have that, because that makes me think a bit naive and outside of the box, if you understand what I mean. I would love for our next shooter to be accessible through a browser.
Oh, yeah.
You go, let's play a session, right? And you enter the computer, you open a browser. I would love for our next shooter to be, as you say, cross-platform, and the same experience on all devices. I think the only obstacle that is going to be solved, it is the input devices. Like, if I have this carbon fiber handheld control that feels my, what I'm thinking. So if I think shoot, it shoots, right? If I have that control and you're on a mobile, for sure it's going to be an unfair advantage that I have, right? But all of these things, I mean, if you look at some of the mobile games today that are free to play, they have this, how to say, capped experience. I like to play some games, and then and most of the free-to-play games are, pay to win in some way, but many of them have these tournaments or events where people's equipment and what they have inside the game is capped to a certain level, right? To level the playing field. And for sure, I mean, you're going to see most likely the same type of solutions coming up for somebody on mobile playing somebody on a PC or what that may be. But the most important thing I would like to say is, like, people like to be entertained. And digital entertainment and in the video games, I do see them, HBO, Netflix, Prime, all of these things that we stream TV series or movies. I mean, games are going to go the same way. You're going to be able to access what you want, wherever you want. That's for sure.
If you ask. Yeah, it has to be. Yeah. And I think like what you said, with games being more accessible, the biggest problems with games right now, and we see this with the AAA and mobile, kind of had this issue too, where downloading sizes have to be kept at the limit, right? Right now, AAA is kind of bonkers, where Warzone's like 200 gigs or with Unreal 5, it looks amazing. It can do amazing things. And the demo for the little test thing that it allows you to download, it's 100 gigs. It's like a 15-minute demo. Right, so that direction of like bigger games are better our hard drive are taking a beating where it is becoming a limitation. And I don't think as a gamer, I appreciate like half my hard drive being taken up by one game. And it is a problem that is growing, where streaming seems to be very attractive because I just want it to be kept off my computer and play and not have to worry about installing things or waiting, especially like for mobile too. You know, you guys are not kept at a certain launch size, right? That's really restricting on what you can create. And it just all points either to someone revolutionizing compression technology that where downloading size don't matter, or most likely the streamability of content where it just frees up space on whatever device that you're launching it from. It has to happen. I mean, yeah.
In relevance to that, we have one functionality of our game on Heist being developed at the moment is to lower the size of the game, right? If you look at, let's say, Fortnite, I think it's just 200-300 megabytes or something when you download it to the phone, and then it downloads the content from within the game. And for us, it's quite interesting. I mean, we don't have that. Our game is like 2 gigs or something, 3. And for me, I'm a business guy also, it's going to be, I just want to see the difference, right? Right. So how was the views in the App Store versus downloads prior and post us moving to the same solution as the big guys? So where the client is small, you can download it quickly, even play the first sessions. And then if you like it, you know, download each portion of the game as you go. For sure, it's going to improve our KPIs. And, you know, just by stating that, and my belief that, you know, today people have a couple of games they play, right? You don't only play one game. You have a couple of games you play. So if one of those games was, as you say, streamable, it didn't take up anything on the hard drive, you know, you access it everywhere and it's super smooth, for sure it's going to have an advantage towards other games you're playing, right?
Yeah.
And that per se, That forces everybody to move in that direction. It's like, you know, one of my investors told me, like, the McDonald's already has a fully functioning automated burger restaurant, right?
Right.
They have had it for like many years, and everything is better. Like, it's hermetically sealed, and you know, everything is just better. So, once, let's say, McDonald's launches that, or whoever launches that, that becomes the only way. It's more efficient. Everybody needs to follow. Same thing goes for our industry with the games. You know, when somebody comes up with a more efficient solution, for sure, we all will follow. That's our nature as entrepreneurs, as game developers, and so on. We want to be effective. At least at SOZA, that's in everybody's DNA.
Yeah, the efficiency on both sides, right? As a gamer, they're impatient. As game developers, we're impatient. We want to build things and not have to be wrestling with the tools and anything that stops us from getting our idea across from our brains to actual code, right? I think it's heading to that point where the wait time is starting to be behind us, right? It is an interesting time where streaming, I think, a few years ago was kind of like frowned upon. You know, we kind of remember the famous Xbox One incident where it's like, oh, it's always on, it's always online connectivity, right? And that caused a whole stir around there. It's just like, wow, they're all Big Brother's watching and stuff. But now it's like, yeah, it has to be on. It's like, what can you use computers? Using your computer, I think anybody can relate, right? When you use a computer and you don't have internet access, it becomes this like useless brick. Yeah, it's like, what am I going to even do? Yeah. So it's
That's also part of, that's how I try to view our future. I'm trying to see like what, as you said, a couple of years ago, oh, I'm connected. Somebody's listening, whatever. And today it's like, I'm not connected. What can I do with this piece of technology? Nothing, right? It's useless for me. So you see those, and it's, for me, at least my understanding, it's going really quick. Like people are accepting things quite fast, yeah. Faster.
Especially last year. Yeah. Last year speed everything up, I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, if I look at SoZap and then I look at what we're going to do, I mean, I see a super exciting future, as I said in the beginning of this interview. I mean, for us, I see like, okay, we did our heist, we were 9 men. We had barely resources, right? Now we're a listed company. We have this game that every update we do is improving the KPIs. And I can just, you know, we are just getting more and more energized because we see that the future is ours. And when I say ours, smaller creative studios that really want to, you know, to perform, they want to create a product, they want to create something. And that's why, I don't know if you saw some things on our website, but we actually, slogan, that's what you say. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We say creatively together strong. That comes from Planet of the Apes, Apes Together Strong. So I do believe in a creative future because, I mean, if you look at things, you have AI. I mean, if you look at Photoshop, I don't know if you use those tools, but I use Photoshop mm-hmm. sometimes. I mean, now you have this connected AI online, you know, marquee tools, different things that needed human action are now being automated, right? So the question is, what's left, right? And for me, the future is creative. It's only creative because there is profit to be made in automating stuff. And that's what a lot of corporations are going to do. Smaller corporations or smaller studios like SoZA, that gives us more and more space to be more and more creative. We need to be creative. Entertainment is creative. I mean, just listen to all the music we listen to is creative, right?
Right. That's why I'm always interested in the mobile industry because I feel a lot of ways in the last decade, the mobile games have kind of led a lot of the change for how the business of games work. You know, the loot, the boxes, all the subscription or free to play stuff that came from the mobile industry. And now AAA are adapting that because they're like, oh yeah, it'd be nice to kind of be profitable every 3 months and not just right after release. Yeah. Right. You know, Fortnite gave is embedded with mobile business DNA. That's how Fortnite became Fortnite. It was originally set to be like a $50 game release, right? And they changed because they were in the middle of that landscape change. And so, like you said, how mobile is kind of leading the charge. It's always interesting to kind of see what you guys over there are doing and as well what's next to kind of set the pace of for the rest of the industry. And this last year kind of helped with people being more connected now. And like you said, strength in lower numbers seems to be the trend for everything. It's unsustainable, first of all. AAA kept going in this direction where bigger, more expensive and stuff, and that was unsustainable. And only recently we're starting to see the shift to like efficient strike teams, and then looking at other ways to kind of strengthen the bottom line, basically.
Well, when I look at that, you know, free to play, I mean, free to access and download, and then you would pay for a deeper experience, right? Fortnite, Call of Duty with the player passes for sure. I do see purity coming in into the free to play. I mean, if you have a great product, if you have a game with retention, right? If you have retention, that's a driving factor to give it away. Like if you have a game that, you know, that has strong retaining KPIs, then for sure, it's more profitable to distribute it freely, right? And then offer clear and simplified ways to monetize as season pass is. It's a clear way for people to make a decision, right? Do I want to buy this? And you buy that and you're good, right? Today, if you ask me, like if you would charge money for a game today, it means that you haven't made a
good product,
good enough game. You know what I mean?
I totally understand. Yeah. It's
like if you make something, you'd be like, ah, shit. Okay. Then you'd be like, okay, let's charge them $50 for this title because it's really fun. It's really cool for 2 days, right? Or for 1 week. But if you see that you have a long, strong retention, virality, K factor, good KPIs, then for sure it's more profitable to give it away for us.
Definitely, definitely. It's like
free to play. Sometimes people look at it like as an evil tool, right? If you remember that Smurf game on mobile where kids were buying these red berries, ruining their parents' economy. I remember that back 2010, 11, 12. But today, when I look at it, for me, if you want to give something away for free, that and then profit on the people that, you know, really enjoy it and want a deeper experience, then for sure it needs to be a great product, right? Because if you give away a shitty product, well,
yeah, everyone won't play it again.
They're not going to play it again. So free to play is actually driving at least us to create better experiences. For sure.
Yeah, maybe there's a bad comparison. It's like drug sells itself type of mentality, you know.
Well, yeah, the experience. No, the right word is the right thing to say is a good experience markets itself, right? It sells itself. I play Armed Heist, but I do play Fortnite when I play with my nephews, and I do play PUBG when I play with my friends, right? And I have the economy, so I could pay technically for any title, right? But when you do play these games, you do see, for me at least, it's like, okay, how could you even? Well, we're doing that basically. Free play. You're buying Facebook marketing, right? Yeah. You're buying Facebook marketing or Google Ads, any marketing, where you're saying, hey, download this game for free, user acquisition. That's a big thing in the mobile industry. So we're actually paying people to download our game, if you understand what I mean. We're giving away money to say to people, hey, download this game. Right. So that's our incentive. Our incentive to make great games and then profitable games start by us paying our users to download them. That's what we're doing, technically. We're paying them because they're using Facebook for free, right? Facebook's not charging them because they're using Facebook. They're charging us. So we're giving our users money to download our game. Technically, I mean, hypothetically speaking. And then if we make a good enough experience, a great enough experience, some of them will become monetizing users, right? And we would have a positive cash flow on our game. So the whole free to play is just creating a higher focus on us game developers to create even better experiences,
better products. Yeah. So what would you say is next? Free to play was, of course, the last 5-7 years, a big thing, still a big thing. More and more bigger games or games overall who believe in their product are kind of using it as a way as like, let's get users to try it and remove as many barriers as possible to get them to try it, because we know once they play it, they'll stick around and it's addictive, right? What is the next big thing that you feel is going to, either it's the lineage of free to play or something else that needs to be done for more engagement? Is there something happening in the mobile space right now that is kind of different than free to play that is changing that landscape a bit?
Well, no. Well, you have these streaming services. You have Apple Arcade, right? Google Play Pass, right? You're being charged a monthly fee, and then you access this catalog of games. Library of games, no ads, no monetization, just a pure experience.
Netflix, basically.
That's basically. And that's one thing. And for sure, it's going to work. It's going to need more time, but it's working and it's going to work. But what I see is, and then you have, if that's the business model, distribution model, right? Then you have these games that have user-created content. Minecraft being one right. more famous of them, right? And then you have this last one, was it?
Roblox.
Yeah, well, you have Roblox. My kids play Roblox. You have these games. So I do see a combination in some way to try to engage the users even more. For example, if you look at Fortnite, and every time they come up with a season, sometimes they have this Star Wars collaboration, you know, where they have something else. I do see maybe even in some way getting the users to vote or to affect upcoming seasonal updates. Mm-hmm. I mean, Minecraft, you build the worlds, right? The whole game is on user-created content. But let's say game like Fortnite, right? That's not. Those kind of engagements I do see. I saw actually one mobile game that it was the first time actually I saw it. I think it was Tennis Clash. Mm-hmm. They had a collaboration with Gucci, the fashion brand. Mm-hmm.
It's pretty big.
So, it was, I did it fully. I still don't comprehend, you know, the collaboration, what it gives to the users, if those users are familiar with the brand. I can't really see that, but I do. What I do see is I see cross-platform, I do see cross-collaboration in a deeper way, right? In Sweden, we have this studio, Hazelight, I think it's called, Hazelight,
right?
Yeah. With this movie director. Made, I think, three great games, right? Now, that guy started the studio song, but what I want to say is I do see collaborations. I mean, why wouldn't Quentin Tarantino host a season on, let's say, Fortnite? Mm-hmm. You know, just to say something abstract. Like, those kind of things I do see. Your original question was if I see any other way of monetizing in the future. No, it's going to be free to download and a deeper experience, like season pass or something, or access. Let's say Quentin Tarantino is, you know, guest season or some event in a game that could be pay to access.
Yeah. I definitely agree with you there. Like, there's like there was some experimentation last year or the year before with how Netflix kind of like choose your own adventure type of shows, right? It kind of had an interactive feel to it. I also see, you know, with Disney owning everything, where the medium, the game medium, is kind of being finally acknowledged, where like before they used to, like, whenever they put a movie, they put a game and all this stuff, but I think there's going to be more cross collaboration with story, where you can experience something and then for like a big segment. I think Matrix, a long time ago, Matrix tried to do something like that. They had the movie and then they had Matrix Online, right? It was just too early for its time, but I feel like a lot of that, those ideas are coming back, where if you're enjoying the game, you know, complete the story by watching this movie and then you can fill in the gap by reading this book or something, like, or comics or something. I think more mediums are starting to kind of meld together, where game is becoming a good focus on how these consumers are staying engaged with the license, basically.
Yeah. I want to add something there. I mean, I don't know if we're off topic, but it's a nice dialogue. I mean, I do see a future where, remember, we're still like linear games. You know, if you look at Candy Crush, it's a linear game, right? But if you replay a level, the candies are not going to be the same, right? There's going to be a difference. Mm-hmm. The framework is the same. It's level 17. But the outcome for every session is going to differ. So what I see, now we're talking a bit more like creatively, mm-hmm. what I see is I see these linear games having machine learning, AI, changing and tweaking, adapting. So every time, let's say Super Mario, you're playing level 5, you know how it goes. But imagine if it was interacting with you. It would be like a Pixar movie. Sorry, my camera is...
Oh, yeah. No worries.
It would be like a Pixar movie, let's say Ice Age, where every time you watch it, it's some camera angles are different. Some of the dialogue, the narrative is the same, but it still differs. Do you understand?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, like it's like procedurally driven or something.
Yeah. And that's something that would be cool in any game, in any form. Like if you play Fortnite on one season, for that season, the schematics of the map are the same, right? The buildings are at the same place and everything like that. I do believe there's space for that procedural changing the experience every time. Not so much that you don't recognize it, just that much that you feel that it's a fresh experience.
Yeah, I totally. Yeah.
I mean, when you play those games, the guns don't drop at the same place, right? It differs a little, so you have that in some contexts. But even more of that would be something that I believe the users would enjoy.
Definitely, I think movies kind of experiment with that, where they played with different perspectives, but it's like the same event. You know, you have different characters experience the same event, but like from different angles. Games are where, not quite there yet. You know, open world games, sure, you have a player input, but you know, there's usually a goal that everyone gets, and basically people can YouTube it and it's the same experience, sort of, right? But if there was a way where unique to the player, gender, age, or whatever, right, just players a way of playing somehow changes the outcome, I think we saw like little dribbles of that, you know, like Mass Effect, but it's very controlled, right? You know, like dialogue trees and all this, it's all telling the same story at the end. But now with the computing power, the ability hopefully to stream this stuff, tools are getting stronger creatively, we're more open to kind of create scenarios, right? I think there's a lot of opportunity there where game developers can just have fun with it and really create a truly diverse experience for one, for each game player, right? So there's a lot to it. And then you add that with all the different mediums and ability to kind of work with each other, I think it'd be pretty exciting. I think it's probably going to be Disney, since they own the most.
the future is exciting. As again, I said in the beginning, I mean, I can't wait to see tomorrow. Well, I live today, and then when I go to sleep, I just want to see tomorrow. For us, again, shows up. For me, I have these thoughts and great ideas, but they are confined by the company, the space, and the resources we have. But I do see us. I do see us getting even, I mean, as we are creative. Now we're getting the resources that we need in terms of, you know, manpower, experience, knowledge. And I can't wait. Hopefully it will be us, but maybe somebody else. I can't wait for the next Fortnite. I mean, how Fortnite impacted the... the shooter genre, well, actually it was PUBG with the blue circle, but hey,
of course,
who's counting?
I'm pretty sure PUBG guys are counting.
yeah, for sure. But I mean, that's something interesting. I mean, you know how long time it takes to make a game like PUBG? It's a lot of manpower. It's a lot of code, right? And then you have this blue circle that maybe takes, what, 2 days to implement? Like, they create this open world. Hey, everybody's shooting at each other. And then somebody says, why don't we try a blue circle, right? Because it gets smaller and smaller. And I mean, that's something that takes a couple of hours or a couple of days. And it's a complete game changer.
Yeah.
That circle was a complete game changer. I mean, those happenings or those events, those are epic. And of course, as the CEO of SOZAP, I'm trying to, or we're trying always to find what would be that 2-3 lines of code that makes all the difference. That's the treasure that we always try to sniff out. Amazing! It's amazing how something like that can have such an impact.
Yeah, I always equate to any type of creatives, but specifically game developers. Things are always best with limitations. I think with creatives, it's dangerous. The opposite is true, right? Where we have complete creative freedom to do whatever we want with no matter, you know, the horsepower to do what we need. I think that always ends up with a product that just is kind of like the rest of the mill. So I think the future, like we discussed, has always been smaller teams with limitations, and like the circle, right? That's what it is. It's just a limitation and just packing people so that they have to interact. And I think that has always been, at least my favorite games have always been like, what is that little box that you have to play between, you know, because the fundamentals of a game is that makes it fun are the rules, right? So whatever rules is the fundamentals of the game that makes things exciting, really.
Yeah, yeah, and the limitations. And the limitations, I don't know if Fortnite had any limitations, but if you look at, let's say, the graphics, the graphics in Fortnite, they were absolutely not pushing the boundaries. If you look a couple of years back, Battlefield, for example, it was always the latest NVIDIA card, right? RTL, like real time. Everything was just pushing. And had to be, they were connected with the hardware so much that, you know, that was what we were waiting for. If you think, at least now, it was like, okay, the next Battlefield, I know what the game is. Yeah. I just want to see how they push the
graphics,
technology, the graphics, right? The experience. And today we see the opposite. I at least am seeing the opposite, where games are not pushing those boundaries and still outperforming.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's why I think Nintendo had always the last laugh. Everyone always made fun of Nintendo, but they figured it out. It's like, hey, it's not about the hardware. It's about the content.
No.
And they've always, the experience. And they're still number one in terms of just the best type of games, really. Raid, you made it to an hour. I want to thank you for your time. This is the time where I actually shut up and allow you to kind of promote, give a shout out to anything that you want to talk about to our listeners out there, and where to go if they want to interact with you guys.
Well, as a CEO of a listed company, I'm going to focus on SOZAP and why somebody would invest in what we do. If that's okay.
Of course.
As we talked about it in this podcast, I do see a future where software is going to be more and more tooled up, a future where smaller studios are going to be able to perform as the bigger ones have. At the same time, as we just said, it's not about pushing the hardware, the graphics or the amount of, let's say, code. It's about creating an experience. And with free-to-play, I mean, this free distribution and the new, I mean, if you look at the YouTubers or the Twitch folks, you don't even need that marketing budget that you have had to have in the past.
You need to be creative. You need to entertain your users. SozUp is, I think we've proven that we are capable of doing that as we created Armed Heist with very little resources. We're now live upping Armed Heist. And at the same time, we are discussing and soon starting pre-production of our next shooter that's going to be cross-platform. And I do want to, as a CEO, I do want to build a company that people want to come into the office. We say office, I say the hub or the campfire. And I do want to build products that outlast us, IPs and games that will be here when we're not. If you want to make great games, if you want to be part of building this great studio even greater, you're welcome to contact us directly. We're still looking for passionate developers, artists, game developers. Much welcome. And thank you for having me on this podcast.
Of course, right. So like when I'm serious, man, when I look towards the future, what the game should can't be, I look towards you guys. I think it's going to be the small teams. Most likely it's going to start with mobile, like even with PUBG and all this stuff. Like I think a lot of those ideas, again, came from mobile, connecting everyone and doing it free to play and stuff. Right. So I'm looking towards SozUp to kind of like, what is the next 5 years? And I'm very excited to see you guys' future and be that guy. Like, I talked to them like 5 years ago. Look at where he is now, type of thing. So super exciting, man. And thank you for coming on. And as always, man, super appreciate it.
Thank you, man. We'll have a catch up.
Yeah, of course.
Catch up soon.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you are liking the podcast, go to the Apple iTunes store and give Game Dev Unchained a 5-star rating. This will help spread the joy and love and exposure for the podcast, and we thank you very much. If you want to continue the conversation, go to our Discord, which can be found on our website, www.gamedevunchained.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at BlueChamps, BlueChamps. You want to catch these episodes live every Tuesdays and Thursdays, go to twitch.tv/blue_champs. Email me any of your concerns or questions that you want me to read aloud at the beginning of each episode at info@gamedevunchained.com. And if you want to further support us and help unlock the next feature, which is the voicemail feature, go to patreon.com/BlueChamps. This gives listeners a chance to kind of call in, leave a message for both me and the guests to answer your deepest, darkest questions and comment on your deepest, darkest secrets. Thank you, everybody.